All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. ScottHorton.org is the website. And our first guest today is Chase Madar. He's the author of The Passion of Bradley Manning and a regular contributor to Tom Dispatch. And I think, if I remember right, a lawyer. Yeah, that's what it says. Did I just say that? A lawyer in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in front of me anyway. I don't know. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be back on your show, Scott.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here, and there's important news this week about the treatment of Bradley Manning in his pre-trial detention. Some new claims by his attorney, David Coombs, and I was hoping you could teach us all about it.
I'd be glad to. So the big news is that David Coombs is going to file a motion to dismiss all the charges against Private First Class Bradley Manning on account of the unlawful confinement and flagrant violation of Manning's constitutional rights that were imposed on Bradley Manning when he was held in very strict isolation for nearly 11 months. And this strict solitary confinement he was subjected to, first at a military base in Kuwait for 2 months and then for nearly 9 months at the Quantico Brig in Virginia, was one of the more famous parts of Bradley Manning's case because it was so harsh. This is pretrial confinement, which is unusual, although not unheard of. And it was very draconian. For 9 months in Quantico Prison, Bradley Manning was in his cell alone. He had to respond every 5 of his waking minutes to the query of, "Are you okay?" He was not allowed to do any exercise in his jail cell. He was only allowed to correspond, to write to people for 1 hour a day. In the 1 hour of exercise time he was allowed, they gave him crappy athletic shoes that were too big and without shoelaces that kept falling off. And this was all against the advice of the psychiatric experts at the Quantico Brig and outside psychiatric experts, but it was done as so many of the most horrible things that we do to our fellow man are done for Bradley Manning's own good.
Now, I don't know much about it. I don't know if you do. I don't know if anybody ever really wrote about it, but it sounds like there could be the makings of a whole heroic story there about the military psychologists who refused to go along with this and recommended against it. They must have known about all this pressure from the top to go along.
They did, and it's clear now due to emails that were finally released after many requests to the Bradley Manning's defense counsel that pressure did come all the way from the top, from a 3-star general who was running Quantico Brig for a time. And the psychiatric experts at the brig, I find it quite admirable what they were doing. According to the emails and documents that we have in meetings, they were demanding that the brig make it clear that psychiatric reasons and prevention of injury watch had absolutely nothing to do with why Bradley Manning was being confined in solitary. It was against their medical advice, and for pretty much the whole 9 months, they were advising that POI, that's prevention of injury, watch be dropped because there was absolutely no medical reason for it. And it was just done out of bloody-minded, punitive vengeance to make a big example of Bradley Manning, maybe to break him and get him to implicate Julian Assange.
Uh-huh.
And it's a testament to Bradley Manning's strength and fortitude as a human being that he did not go along with this. He did not break.
All right, now, did they have any other excuse? Because this sounds to me pretty damning. You have prevention of injury as its own special initials and everything, right? POI. This is if the psychologists say you have to prevent this person from hurting or killing themselves, then these are the things you have to do. And under the rubric of that, under the color of these prevention of injury restrictions, that was, and then they took that and then just extrapolated it from there. Did they have any other excuse for doing so? Is there any other excuse that they could use for doing so other than the official psychologists on the job on this brig told us to do it?
You know, the only excuse that has come to light so far, and it's not much of an excuse, is, well, the brig commanders ordered the continuation of solitary because, well, they're in charge. And that they said, well, the psychiatrists, they may be medical experts, but their opinion is only advisory. And they only see Bradley Manning occasionally. But we, the commander, see him all the time. We know what's best for him, so we're going to keep him stuck in the strictest, harshest.
Are they saying that, though? The local commander saying, well, we were very concerned about him, and we disagreed with the psychologist?
They're pretty much saying, they're not even, you know, I think, wasting their breath by saying that we're concerned about him. They're just saying that, well, we're in charge here, is basically their defense. It's one of these circular defenses of, well, we're in charge, it's our decision, not yours. And that's, of course, not a defense or the decision. That's just a statement that we're in charge. And
now, how much different is what they did to him compared to what they would do to any other soldier convicted or being held, I shouldn't say convicted, being held on the accusation of a heinous felony at Quantico, for example?
Well, it's a lot harsher. I mean, for one thing, according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, brig authorities are only allowed to keep a soldier in pretrial isolation or any kind of pretrial confinement to the minimum degree necessary if that alleged perpetrator is a risk to others or a risk to himself. So in this case where you have the professional psychiatric opinion saying that he's at no risk to himself and not to others either, well, you know, that just doesn't stand. The cells in Quantico are single occupancy, and max solitary confinement is imposed from time to time on other soldiers, and it's harsh and it's awful. So I don't want to say that there's a good reason, because there isn't, for Bradley Manning's solitary confinement, but it's not quite as exceptional either in the military justice system or in the civilian justice system, as we would like to think.
Oh, yeah. Well, regularity certainly wouldn't justify it. They tortured tens of thousands of Iraqis. That's just tens of thousands of counts of things wrong.
Absolutely. And, you know, many advocates and defenders of Bradley Manning, we would like to see this as a cruel aberration of our normal functioning of the justice system, both military and civilian. But I'm not sure how much of an aberration it is. I mean, we have 20,000 American prisoners in federal supermax prisons, not for exotic national security crimes, but for run-of-the-mill crimes. We have a further 50 to 80,000 people in some kind of solitary confinement in other federal and local prisons. We don't do a good job of counting. We don't seem to care that much as a nation. And it's this perspective that led the advocates Gene Casella and James Ridgway, the excellent advocacy group Solitary Watch, to call Bradley Manning's treatment cruel and usual, because we use solitary confinement as a way to punish people all the time in America. It's unfortunately a normal, although kind of invisible, part of our penal landscape. It's most of the time not very controversial. I would love to tell you that holding Bradley Manning in solitary pretrial is some kind of horrible aberration, but even there it isn't, because there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people, again, we don't do a good job of counting as a nation, of prisoners held in pretrial isolation, just like Bradley Manning was.
Yeah, well, Anthony Gregory has pointed out, and he's one of very few who's ever pointed out, that even though we all accept it, we all know it, it's the butt of jokes from coast to coast and of all ages, that part of your prison sentence in America, if you go to prison, is to be raped. Ha ha! Mm-hmm. Isn't that hilarious? That's part of our prison sentences in America, rape. And there's no group of people trying to stop that anywhere. Nobody even cares. This country is just barbarians from coast to coast, if you ask me. So, yeah, that's the whole thing. They could beat the living crap out of Bradley Manning, and that would just be another day at another prison in America. Big deal.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Chase Madar. He's a lawyer from New York. He writes for Tom Dispatch from time to time. And we're talking about, oh, and he wrote the book on Bradley Manning, The Passion of Bradley Manning. And we're talking about his abuse in custody and his lawyer's push to have him released. He's done his time and then some because of the way they treated him in his pre-trial detention. Never mind the charges against him are bogus, and never mind that the Commander-in-Chief and the Secretary of Defense have already pronounced him guilty publicly. And to even put him on trial at this point would be a laughing stock of a Star Chamber farce. They abused him terribly, at the very least. And now, is that already, Chase, is that already a legal doctrine that, no, you just can't do that, and this is the exclusionary rule, is the accused is excluded from trial if you abuse him like this before he gets a chance at one?
Well, the judge has discretion to rule on this. It's not hard and fast. And the Lord Bradley Manning's lawyer has asked for, at the very least, if you're not going to dismiss all these charges due to the inhumane, cruel, and unusual treatment, then at least give him credit for each day that he suffered in solitary confinement. Give him credit for 10 days that will count against the sentence that he's likely to get. But this whole question about whether Bradley Manning's treatment has been an aberration or been normal opens up a larger question. And that's, where does the war on terror and all its abuses come from? Is it coming back home and infecting our domestic justice system with the treatment of Bradley Manning and with a few others? It's tempting to look at it that way. And we've looked at Bradley Manning's incredibly harsh, over-the-top punitive treatment for no real legal or lawful purpose. And people have said, oh, that's KGB tactics, that's we're treating him the way we treat unprivileged combatants at Guantanamo. And there's some truth to that, but I think it's also true that Bradley Manning is getting treated the way other American prisoners get treated, which is really the most damning statement you can make at all.
Yeah, in other words, the terror war is the exporting of America's police state. They don't hate us because we're free. We never were.
Mm-hmm. And after a few decades of a war on crime and a war on drugs, the war on terror is just a natural outgrowth of that. You know, we kept hearing after September 11th and after Guantanamo that, well, the gloves are coming off now. A great many Americans who have a family member or a loved one in the prison system were very surprised to learn that the gloves were ever on in the first place. And that's how harshly we treat people. Not surprisingly, a great many of the intellectuals and jurists who are pushing this argument that we've exported harshness are black Americans, members of a minority group that has just borne such a heavy brunt of our war on drugs and our war on crime that have just caused so much destruction in the lives of so many people without solving many problems.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you mentioned his Bradley Manning's abuse. I want to focus back on the Manning case itself for a minute here. Mm-hmm. I certainly appreciate the larger picture stuff. In fact, Alfred McCoy is coming up next to talk about all that, too.
Great.
But Manning was held in Kuwait for how long before they even brought him to Quantico?
Nearly 2 months.
And then, so how much do we know about what happened to him there?
Well, we're finding out more and more as the prosecution very grudgingly releases emails and records to Bradley Manning's defense lawyers. And the prosecution has been playing all kinds of games in releasing these documents that they have a legal obligation to produce for a fair trial. So more and more is coming to light. We're getting some documentation of conversations even between Bradley Manning and prison guards. And he's asking them, why are you keeping me in solitary? You know that there's no medical rationale for it. And they're saying, hey, well, we're in charge. You know, we're in charge. That's the answer. Again, the circular defense of authority. We're in charge because we're in charge. We're going to do what we'd like to you because we're in charge. Big question is,
in other words, they're committing the same war crime against him that drove him over the edge and made him a whistleblower in the first place. Was convicting
Absolutely.
An innocent person for simply free speech issues.
Mm-hmm. And the one big question is, well, what kind of impact is the defense lawyer's suit to dismiss all the charges going to have? Will the judge, Denise Lynn, dismiss all the charges? I doubt it. You know, judges are intensely political beings. Law itself is a form of politics that depends on appearing neutral and objective and apolitical for its legitimacy, but judges and courtrooms are very political spaces. And she's under intense political pressure to deliver a verdict, a guilty verdict. I'd be shocked if she dismissed all the charges, despite the very well-documented, over-the-top, harsh treatment that violates much of the Uniform Code of Military Justice that was meted out to Bradley Manning.
Well, now, if you go back to the atmosphere of the time when Manning was first arrested, and all the fanfare and all of the 2 minutes hate about Assange and WikiLeaks and blood on his hands, everyone chant and everyone take part, like your favorite nighttime drama that everybody watches together separately and all that kind of thing. I can understand that they would get away with this kind of thing in the midst of that, to me, quite manufactured, but still that fever pitch of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, didn't that wear off pretty quickly? And isn't it pretty obvious that this guy, Bradley Manning, isn't he a pretty, the kind of guy that you see on the news and he's, you like him instead of hating his guts like they want you to? You know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I find him very sympathetic.
Sympathetic is exactly the word I was not able to come up with. Thank you.
And I think releasing these documents, if that's what he indeed did, is very praiseworthy.
But, I mean, they're treating him as though we're still all, chanting at the witch trial to go ahead and hang him.
Well, it's just shameful how Bradley Manning and Assange, too, have been scapegoated for the bloody catastrophe of American foreign policy over the past 10 years. I mean, what's really been killing people in Iraq and Afghanistan and killing, you know, foreigners as well as Americans, it's not leaks, it's U.S. foreign policy. And our foreign policy has been distorted and driven to a large degree by government lies, secrecy, and distortion. And WikiLeaks is a solution to that, not a problem. But I don't think it's worn off completely, unfortunately. So many people just say, well, he broke the law, the law's law, you gotta have law, so, yeah, he's gotta go. Yeah, even if it's good for us, it's really disappointing to me how major newspapers and media outlets who have gotten tons of scoops and tons of stories from the WikiLeaks have not risen to the fence of their ultimate source, Bradley Manning. They've been content to paint him as a weirdo and hang him out to dry.
Yeah. Well, and if the law's the law, that's fine. How about all the law-breaking exposed in the WikiLeaks gets prosecuted first and Manning last? That would be fair.
Absolutely.
Right. Thanks. Chase Madar, everybody. TomDispatch.com. Appreciate it.